Tech is a bi-weekly podcast exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. It is part of the podcast network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Our show today is hosted by Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Welcome back to Wells Tech, everybody. This is episode 772, recorded on Thursday, March 19th, 2026. I'm Martin Spriggs. It's a show about technology and ministry and where those two intersect. Joining me as usual, Sally Draper. Hello, Sally Draper.
Hi, Martin. Happy to be joining you. Happy to be joining you because this is going to be a really fun Wells Tech. I can tell already.
We had some lively chatter even before we started.
We do. It's always a fun time when we have Dr. Professor Rachel Reno from Martin Luther College and Jason Schmidt from Oshkosh ISD. Is that the right way to say it? And conversation around education and technology. Welcome, you guys.
Thanks for having us again. You guys are very brave.
Always a pleasure.
Welcome, Jason. What's going on for you guys?
Like here in Oshkosh or sorry. Apparently I haven't had enough coffee yet this morning. So
here in New Ulm, we had a big snowstorm and we got the MLC students got two extra days of spring break out of it. So it was a very
unprecedented.
Well-planned snowstorm.
Hey, at least they got to come back to school, right? What was that? That was like exactly 6 years ago that that everything got shut down. So
don't speak those words.
It's a historical thing. It's fine.
History sometimes repeats itself, though. I'm not right.
Yeah. Well, at least it was a snowstorm this time. Yeah, and we had significant. It was a pretty significant event here too. We got out of 2 days of school as well. But our spring break doesn't start until next week, so we get to spread things out a little bit.
Very nice.
Yeah. So, topic of the day: something to do with technology, I bet, huh? Maybe not.
Well, it's all Jason's fault this time around.
Yeah, I'm really sorry. This is a topic that I think, you know, if you've been paying attention to like some of the things going on in the news and social media and LinkedIn and just like other conversations really that we're having at a system level too, around the use of technology in schools. And it's almost kind of like we're seeing the pendulum kind of swing back, right? So like, you know, if we go back to the time, like actually when I first started coming on the podcast, you know, we are starting to get into that era of like how, you know, like, hey, here are all of these cool things you can do with technology and, you know, like Web 2.0 and, you know, like all of those really like neat engagement strategies and stuff like that. And then people are like, oh, cool, cool, cool. And then, you know, like one-on-one programs. And now we're kind of seeing the pendulum swing back. And that's kind of, I think, the topic of our discussion today, right, is to bring up this whole idea of like resistance now to having technology in classrooms and kind of people wanting to go back to the basics. And you know, or that's like, you know, the phraseology that people use. So this is just I've been living this topic for a while and thought it would be an appropriate time for us to bring it up on the podcast too.
Yeah. And I think that historic event you mentioned, COVID 6 years ago, fits in that timeline that you just expressed as well, Jason. We were talking about these things and things were happening. And then COVID happened and the accelerator kind of went to the floor. Mm-hmm. And then we've been living this post-COVID and maybe that accelerator is lessening. I don't know.
Well, and I think during that time, you know, the pendulum just got moved all the way. There was no there was no choice but to completely embrace technology in ways that, a lot of teachers probably wouldn't have otherwise. But through, there were some great things that happened through that. The MLC faculty is so much better versed in our learning management system, and able to make use of some of those tools that we had always had. But at the same time, we had a lot of teachers who didn't have the time to think about the why, and they were just forced into, we're going to do this. And then it kind of a little bit became the norm. And so the book that and podcast and other things that Jason brought to us is called The Digital Delusion. And it kind of I it maybe goes a little bit farther than I would prefer, but I think a lot of the main points are things that at least I have been talking about for a long time, as far as, hey, technology is fantastic and I love it, but it can't replace humans. And I think COVID made us, like, kind of forced us to have technology replace humans in many ways. And now we need to pull that back. And I think he, the author Jared Horvath, is a little more forceful, perhaps,
I think so.
than my interpretation. But I think at the heart of it, that's what they're kind of getting at.
Yeah,
What's
and I think,
interesting when,
go ahead, Martin.
I'm sorry. Yeah, what's interesting to me is as I listened to the podcast and read some summaries of the book. I haven't read the whole book, but it's interesting. It's been like almost 20 years of, kind of a one-to-one push. He makes that point in the book. And 20 years is a pretty good time frame to take a temperature check on how it's going. And so that's one of the big parts of, his position is look at the data. Are our kids learning any better? Are they smarter? Are their tests, what do the test scores look like? And so he goes through a lot of the data and says, pretty forcefully, our kids aren't any better off than they were when we started this whole thing. What did we spend all this money for? Why are we so much still on board with a tech first agenda? And everybody is wasting their time doing this because we could have been spending this money elsewhere. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's kind of the big takeaway I got is that this is not what we got was not what was on the tin, so to speak. So I think that was my number one takeaway. Maybe that's a little oversimplification.
No, I think you're right, Martin. And that's the thing, like that's the thing about all of this that really just gets me is like there's the we talk about these kinds of things, and we're doing this in such a way that it's like it's reducing or eliminating some of the critical thinking that goes along with this. So like, it's popular, like we want to find a scapegoat. We want to find oh, hey, this is a reason. And now, like all of a sudden there's this moral panic or whatever about, all of these devices and things that go into classrooms. I think that just like with anything, right? We have there are good pieces and there are bad pieces. And the like the you it's really hard to say that it's any one thing that's a result of all of this stuff. And where I would point to, rather than say like we spent all of this money on devices and this is what's a really bad thing, I agree that like the investment that went into technology, like COVID did not do us a lot of favors as far as like like it gave kids access and all of these kinds of things. And also, it reinforced really bad practices that teachers already had. So, like, and you could probably go back, like, again, like 15 years ago when I started coming on the podcast. I know I've made the comment in the past about technology is like, it's just a tool. Like it's not good or bad one way or the other, but what we do with it is what causes the outcomes that we get. And give me a bad teacher and put them with technology, they're going to be 10 times worse. Give me a good teacher and give them technology, they're going to be 10 times better. I think all this is really highlighting is the bad practices that people already have. And by giving people access to technology without addressing the root cause, which is like, a irrelevant lessons, and we're not adapting to like multisensory, and we are not, we're not incorporating UDL principles or any of these other things like critical thinking, all of this stuff. Like we're not changing the way that we're teaching and taking these bad practices, and now all of a sudden, like we're surprised that kids are worse off, right? So I think, it's a much more complicated issue than what some of these people are presenting, and that's really what gets at me. And like in these in things like this or conversations like this that are going on.
So, if I'm hearing you, Jason, if we spent the next t 20 years taking the tech away, it's not going to improve things, kind of
No.
concept. The bad is still going to happen or whatever.
Exactly right. Like, if your kids are not learning with devices, they're also not learning with paper and pencil. Like, you have to address the instructional practices and fix that before you can worry about like it's not the tools that we're giving people.
Well, and yeah, at a certain point, it's a little like a recipe. Getting kids to learn is like a recipe. And at a certain point, you have to say, perhaps we don't have the right recipe. And there's a lot more that goes into students learning than just using technology or not using technology. And we need to, look closer at, okay, what does it mean for our students to remember things and to think critically? And how do they access things that they've been taught? What's that retrieval process? And that's we need to get at the core of what really is any issues or perceived issues with education. We can't just dumb it down to technology or no technology. That's doing our teachers a disservice. That's doing brain science a disservice. That's doing technology a disservice. Teaching is way more complicated.
Yeah, I was thinking as I read, well, let's take it all away. What happens when they leave school and they are exposed to the screens for the whole rest of their waking hours? How are we going to judge things or differentiate that when it's the world that we're in? It's a digital world. And
One point he makes is that some of the observations he's making over, what's going on in a classroom is they're teaching kids how to use tools versus, when we were in school, I sound very old.
you are very
We
old,
were
Martin.
taught to use, yeah, that's true. We were taught how to use any tool, or we were hopefully, emerging from our educational experience with the ability to adapt, uses the word durable, resilient, the ability to pick up different tools as they come along, because that's surely what will be the case as we go through our work life and in our professional lives, is that there will be tools. AI is a tool right now that needs to be learned and used appropriately, just like any other tool needed to be learned and used, before that came along. So that's one of the points that he makes. It's easy to fall into that trap and really not even follow the SAMR model or any other model. You are introducing tools because it's sometimes the path of least resistance, and you feel like the child has been educated because they learn how to use the tools of the day, and now they're prepared to go in the workforce, which really isn't true.
And I can attest to it not being true. Our freshmen often struggle with making that transition. It makes me question their ability to transfer their knowledge from what they learned in high school or college into the workforce, when they can't take what they've learned about Google Classroom and transfer it over to Moodle. Are we wasting time? I don't think we are, but are we maybe wasting a little time in, saying, oh, they have to learn this for their future if they can't make that transfer?
Yeah, it makes me think about it's that whole idea of like you were saying, like transfer, knowledge transfer, knowing how to do something, but like also being able to figure things out. So, and I think, and again, that's not a technology problem, that's a people problem, right? Because, the approach to so many things is like, especially when we're at elementary school, it's like, okay, you have to do it this way, this way, this way, this way. And there's no opportunity for independence of thought because we have like everything is so regimented, right? So, again, like it's not, this isn't a conversation about technology itself, but it is about like how are we setting up those systems to incorporate that freedom of thought and and to have kids practice this transferability. And like the scripted, like this is here, I want you to do this is, and we've been talking about this with AI too, right? Like the five paragraph essay, like here's the format, here's what I want you to do, here's how the whole thing needs to go, rather than saying like these are my parameters and this is the objective of what we want to do. I want you to document your journey. Like, how do you get there? How do you, what's the, and that documentation could take any one of a number of forms, whatever's comfortable for you, right? So, like, we need to, that's the perception that we've got to change if we want to, teach these skills, that level of independence, that ability to, to think critically about things and transfer those skills from one concept to another. Like that's where we've got to be putting our effort in. And I'm not saying that our schools aren't doing that and saying like, if kids are coming without those skills, like obviously there's a gap there. And I don't know if that comes in school, if that comes in outside of school, or if that's just, the way kids are and we have to adapt now too. I'm not necessarily willing to say that at this point. Like we haven't devolved to that point, I don't think. But it's like it is something that we definitely need. I guess my biggest point out of this whole thing is it's a more complex issue than just we have too many devices in school.
Where do you put a dent in this? Or we recognize first step is recognizing there might be an issue. Second is, what proactive steps or active steps or action items can you take? Is this a conversation at the MLC? I'm speaking specifically of our Wells schools. Is this a conversation at the MLC level? Is this a conversation around discussions about curriculum? Is this professional development conversation? Where do you spend some meaningful time to address this?
I think it's always been a professional development issue. We've seen that since the very beginning of technology in the classroom. I remember, 5, 7 years ago reading an article about a district in California that implemented iPads and didn't tell anyone how to use them and then took them all away because no one knew how to use them. But I think it goes a little bit beyond professional development because our teachers, I think they have a pretty good grasp of how they could use technology in meaningful ways, but lack the time to do such a thing. Because teaching takes time. And I think that we haven't been super great at giving our teachers enough time to be good teachers while they're also worrying about, their coaching and all those other parts of ministry that are so super important too. But that makes it easier to kind of, I don't want to say take the easy way out because I don't think that's what our teachers do at all, but maybe path of least resistance or just, having to make some tough choices for what they spend time on, and then not having enough extra time to really work at thoughtfully and purposefully integrating technology and just doing what they can do to get things done.
Yeah, and I think to add on to that too, is, we can't undervalue the importance of instructional leadership in our schools too, right? And I am the last person to say that principals in our Weld schools, like, because they're usually teachers too, right? So, like, going in and watching teachers and providing feedback and all of those pieces that's another piece of the puzzle, and that's going to be like the most critical piece of it, right? And that's not just with instructional technology, that's like with anything, like that's instruction, right? So and I don't have an answer for that, because that's like a way more complicated a problem to solve or solution to seek, than anything else that we talk about. But like that's how you move the needle is, teachers don't know what they don't know, and they do the things that they do, and they may not realize that this is not something that's going to be effective, or like they do things that way because they like it. Nobody told them that they couldn't do things that way, or that they should try things differently, or any of those kinds of things. So that's really where those conversations need to be happening, I guess, in answer to your question, Martin, is we really like it's got to start at the building and at the classroom level. And if you don't have like a if the principals are not necessarily able to get into classrooms and provide that feedback and provide that instructional leadership, but teachers at a minimum could be like, putting their plans together and it's like, why am I doing things this way? And if you can answer that and say, well, it's because blah blah blah, like this is best interest of the kids or whatever, then like that's let's keep going with that. But if it's like, well, I don't really know why, well, maybe it's time to start doing some analysis then, and get some more intentional planning into the way that we're doing things. And particularly like when it comes to the instructional technology piece of it, like, go back to last season and listen to some of the SAMR stuff, right? Like those are like that, having some sort of a framework to be able to talk about these things, because the answer should never be, I'm doing it because this is what the book said I should do, or this is the way I've always done it, right? Like there's got to be a real clear reason or rationale for incorporating certain things. And if it allows you to do things that you couldn't normally do, then do it. But there's no reason to do a digital worksheet, right? Like that's not you're decreasing the quality of whatever it is that you want kids to do, because they're at least not getting the fine motor practice that would come with writing.
Yeah, I was thinking that
Good
it
point.
all kind of boils down to how do we deal with teachers that are stuck at S in SAMR, the substitution like you just described. And actually the author and the things I read about his book and everything uses the word friction a lot, that students learn when there's friction, when they have to work through problems and things like that. So maybe that's where you have effective programs with teachers that you say, you can't just substitute. You have to go further and you have to figure that out and stuff. I mean, that seems super simple, but obviously, if no one forces it, they don't get into that mode of struggle and figuring out the next step that really does make a difference, moves them
And
up the SAMR ladder.
yeah, I
I
think.
would say, sorry, Rachel, I'll let you go next, I promise. I would say, like, to even to take that further, Sally, is like if you're stuck at the S in SAMR, you shouldn't be using technology. Like that's like you need to figure some other stuff out
That's
first.
who the
Like,
book's about.
maybe, I don't know. But that would be my guidance, is like, okay, like you're stuck on like digital worksheets, all of these things, like, yeah, no, that's not your this is not a tool that's helping your kids figure out a different way. And that's when I talk about like those when I mention like those bad practices, right? Like if that's all we're doing, then that's a problem. And I think that's what this like what this is addressing is like those low level uses that are detrimental to classroom workflows and all of that kind of stuff, because like that's where we're introducing the wrong kind of friction into the learning process when we do that. So sorry, I'm standing down off of my soapbox now, Rachel, and
no,
I will
not.
Just mute myself and not talk.
I'll get on mine. Well, I think pre-COVID, we almost pushed the substitution level because we wanted teachers to dip their toes in. It was, you know, technology to many teachers was still new and scary. So it's like, hey, just try it out in a way that seems comfortable to you. And then COVID forced substitution for everything without any rhyme or reason. And so now everyone's mostly comfortable with those substitutions. And either they've gone with those substitutions and just keep going, even though there's no real benefit to doing it. Or they were like, hey, technology is dumb because all they did was use substitution. So why should I use it at all? And I think we have to, you know, use that technology beyond that substitution. And I mean, we've always said that, Jason, right? Like substitution is fine, but technology is so much more powerful when it goes beyond that. And I think a big turning point will be when we can get education to not think of technology as something extra or something that makes the classroom cooler or makes me a better teacher because I use it, so I must be cool. And just think of technology is there just like paper and pencils and scissors and crayons and books are there. It's all there. We use what's best. You know, if you're writing a, you know, research paper, you're probably not going to give kids a pack of crayons and unlined paper. It works, but not super well. You're going to want them to have a pencil and probably a sharpener and paper with lines on it because that will be more educationally appropriate. So we know how to make those good choices with our physical tools. We need to do the same with our technology tools.
Well said. Mm-hmm. We should probably move on to the rest of the show. One last question, maybe, and this is probably for Jason. The digital delusion, Jared Cooney Horvath. Must read, you know, something good to consider at the faculty level? Or is this a book you'd recommend?
That's a really hard question, Martin. So, I do think that people should read it, but it should. I would couch that in, like, just like anytime you would like read something that is like, you know, his goal is to sell books, right? Like that's he's mm-hmm. you know he's trying to sell books, and you know a. And he's got like there's a very specific agenda that's being pushed by this, and I think that we don't grow if we are not looking into alternative viewpoints. Like if we're only reading things that reinforce our particular worldview on certain things, like we're never going to grow. Or be challenged. I do think that anybody who has like some sort of a vested interest in educational technology and the way that devices are used in classrooms, I think that this is worth picking up to help broaden your horizons and understand things a little bit more. And I would also say that like if you're already in a space where you think that technology is bad, this is only going to reinforce maybe some of those things and serve as more of an echo chamber and may do more harm than good.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. All right. Thanks for bringing it to the table. Good discussion. Enjoyed it. All right. Again, if you have opinions, you listeners out there, viewers out there, please feel free to reach out to the show and give us your feedback, wellstech@wells.net or wellstech.wells.net's the website, and just leave a note there on the show notes page. We would love to hear kind of your feedback and your take on this whole thing too. All right. I think we can move on to our ministry resources. Sally, what do we got this week?
Well, we wanted to make mention of an upcoming Bible study, and this Bible study is specifically targeted to teens. There's actually been a series over this school year that Pastor Professor Dave Scharf from Martin Luther College has been leading, and the next one is coming up already on Sunday, March 29th. It happens at 6 p.m. Central. I believe it's like a Zoom call, and everyone can jump into that. There's a place to get registered on wells.net, so we'll include a link in our show notes. The topic this time is called Hey There, Delilah, and it's about Samson, Samson the judge from Judges 13 to 16. The little short intro says, we can't help but be drawn to him. If people can name one judge, it's Samson. He had superhuman strength, brimming with confidence. We admire that confidence, and we too can be confident. However, Samson teaches us where to place that confidence and where not to. So sounds like it'll be a real interesting Bible study. This is kind of an offshoot of existing programs for teens, including the International Youth Rally and Wells Youth Nights. And they just want to encourage greater spiritual growth and relational connections in Wells teens locally and across the country. So what a neat way to use technology. Thanks, Pastor
Scharf.
That's
what I was going to say. Perfect fit.
Sounds like an interesting Bible study.
And we'll have a link, or you can go to wells.net, and it's featured there as well. All right, I think it's that time, everybody. It's our picks of the week, one of our favorite segments. And when our guests are with us, we always let them go first, and it's ladies first. Rachel, what's your pick of the week?
Yeah, so my pick of the week is actually a ChatGPT win. I was looking for a way... A very specific thing that I needed when I was grading and giving feedback in my online courses. I wanted a rubric that I could just click to highlight what levels I was assessing a student at, and then either print or take a quick picture to share that with the student. I've been doing it in Google Sheets and then changing the background color of the particular cell, but that's, you know, quite a few clicks. So I explained that to ChatGPT, and it said, hey, you should try this website. It's bestrubrics.com. Whether it's the best or not, I don't know, but it's free, which is awesome. It says it's still in beta, but also it's from like copyright 2002. So I found
2022.
It. 2022. Oh, yeah. That makes a lot more sense, doesn't it? I was still in college in 2002. That makes it's been super stable and everything. You can sign in with Google or make your own account completely free. You create a rubric, and then you can score your, it saves all your rubrics for you, and then you can open them to score them. It does let you, if you want to assign points, it will even give you a grade. I don't like that feature just because I don't believe that if you get all of the lowest column that you deserve a zero necessarily, but that's an entirely different subject for the, you know, philosophical thoughts of how Reno grades rubrics. But then I just take a quick snapshot of it with the snipping tool and drop it in the file feedback in Moodle. And it makes it real quick for me to give that rubric feedback to my students. So bestrubrics.com, free. It only does that, but it does one thing really well, I think. And I am loving it.
Awesome. Do you have to manually create it, or can you import your own, or how does that work?
You do have to manually create it. I just copy paste, copy paste, copy paste. And so it goes pretty quick.
Just wondering if AI helps there. Pretty cool. They
Well,
are
AI did
beautiful.
create some of the rubrics for me already. So.
Right, of course. Of course. All right. Thanks, Rachel. Bestrubrics.com. Jason, it's your pick of the week.
So mine is a recent discovery. One of my teachers pointed this one out to me. So this is Adobe Podcast. So if you are a big fan of design software online, many people are using Canva like crazy. They've been making a huge push into schools. There is a similar push by Adobe to get into schools using their Adobe Express suite of software. So if you are an eligible school, you can get access to Adobe Express for absolutely free for all of you and your users. And one of those pieces that's available in there is Adobe Podcast. So this is a tool for recording a podcast. It also makes editing really super simple. So it will do things like help to enhance the sound quality. So there's an audio enhancement kind of engineering built right into it. So it will analyze your audio input and make it sound better, like it has gone through production. And then it will also allow you to edit the podcast just by editing the transcript. So it'll generate a transcript, and then you can highlight any words that are in there that need to be deleted or anything like that, and it will delete those out of the audio as well. So super easy way to create high quality podcasts that sound really good and also are simple for students to be able to produce their own podcasts in a way that maybe shows learning more authentically than sitting and listening to 25 5-minute presentations on a similar topic. So that is my pick, podcast.adobe.com.
Cool.
Awesome.
Yeah, how long has Adobe been doing that? Because that's everybody's heard of Canva doing that in the schools and giving the free educators accounts and whatever. Has been a while? Has this been around a while?
Yeah, Adobe Express for schools has been around for a while,
Okay.
at least for
Cool.
the last 3 or 4 years.
It's a great tool. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's really pretty powerful.
Okay. Very nice. Sally, you're up.
My turn, and I'm gonna share a website that I learned about recently called bingobaker.com. It's a way to w whip up a batch of bingo cards, and those bingo cards can be printed and used that way, or you can even play virtual bingo using a computer or smartphone or tablet. So they can be traditional bingo cards with numbers on them. Those aren't real hard to come by, though. This actually allows you to fill in the bingo cards and have it have images and or words. Maybe it's on the topic that you're studying or whatever. And you can fill in more than would fit on the bingo card, and it'll allow you to copy and paste into it and things like that. And then you can get scrambled cards and play bingo with them. I was actually introduced to this in a staff meeting where we typically do some kind of warm-up activity in some of our staff meetings, and we used it with words, techie words that we would use during our 2-week scrum terms, things like that. We all were listening for words to come up in the discussion and filling in our bingo cards. It made me pay attention a lot more than I thought I was paying attention, but it was
Tool for
kind of
every
fun to
principal
do.
in a
So it might be
faculty meeting, right?
a good mixer or whatever, but also obviously applicable to anything that you're trying to teach, and a fun, different way to kind of review or reinforce certain concepts. So again, free to use bingobaker.com. Whip up a batch of bingo cards. That's what I've
It's
got.
pretty cool. Yeah. See, baby shower there. That's great. Great
Oh,
use
that's
case for
true.
that too, right? Cool. Thank you, Sally. My pick of the week is something I think I have picked twice before, but it just seems so relevant for the topic at hand, and that is a book called How to Take Smart Notes by Sanke Ahrens. I also did ask Claude to do a quick review, and I'll put that link in the show notes as well, letting you know, or the reader know, what it's all about. But basically, how to take smart notes. Yeah, I kind of make it required reading for my graduate MLC course, and it is a short read. It kind of focuses on an old school, a dead sociologist, Nicholas Luhmann, who had this concept of Zettelkasten, which means slip box, and how he used to take notes, and how he was so prolific in his academic writing. But I think the core principles are very applicable to almost any age or grade level, where you're taught how to take good notes. And I know I was probably the biggest offender. I took terrible notes. And I think a lot of our note-taking skills have to be taught, because it's not a natural thing. We just kind of want to write everything down or highlight everything. And that's almost useless down the road as you're beginning to want to do something with those notes. So it's kind of a bottom-up process where you're kind of determining, what do I want to do with these notes? What kind of dictate how you take them? Four types of notes: fleeting notes, those are the quick capture ones. Literature notes, so you're writing notes based on what you've read or heard. Permanent notes are kind of the important ones. These are fully developed ideas written as if it's for an audience. And those are kind of the things that you kind of build and take and become super valuable as you're maybe going to be writing a paper or going to be referring to it for different use cases. And then you have project notes, which are just notes around a particular project. A couple of points he makes in the book, I think, are really helpful for me. He makes the point that writing is thinking. That when you really want to kind of do some deep thinking, start writing. Whatever that writing concept is, you don't write because you finish thinking. You think by writing, and I think that's great advice. And then one other point that is probably a good technology reminder, that really you need to have a friction-free way to capture your notes. If it's a pain to take notes or capture something, you're not going to do it. So, you know, surround yourself with tools that enable you to take good, smart, and timely notes, whether that's an app on the phone or a notepad that you carry or whatever it is. Just make sure that's always with you and it's not in the way of you kind of capturing what you want to capture. So, very good book. You can read it in an afternoon. It is written for academics, by an academic for academics, but like I say, I think the principles in here are universal as we kind of think as knowledge workers, that we want to capture what's going on in the world around us that we want to refer back to, versus just tucking them away in some tomb that, you know, we'll never find. We don't remember we recorded them there, and they're useless to us. We just wasted our time. So, excellent book.
Great recommendation. Seems to fit well with thinking related to educational technology and yep, the same topics we were talking about earlier.
Nothing wrong with pencil and paper, or crayon and paper.
Crayons for your research paper. There you go.
Right, exactly right. Does the job, can do the job, just maybe not as well. All right, let's move back on to our agenda. And the last segment of our show is always community news and feedback. What did we find this week, Sally?
Well, I just wanted to make mention of something that came across my desk just this morning, and that is that our friend Matt Miller, famous for Ditch That Textbook and many other great resources that he's published and shared on the internet over the years, he has a brand new book, and the date on here says March 17, 2026, so brand new as in it was published yesterday. It's titled AI Literacy in Any Class, and I really like the way he introduced it in the newsletter that I subscribe to. He said, we've talked about keeping students thinking in the AI age. We've explored the timeless thinking skills that still matter, practical classroom activities that keep thinking going, and ways to address academic integrity while empowering students to use AI responsibly. Seems like he's baked in a lot of those concepts from our discussion earlier. And isn't just going for, oh, use AI for everything or whatever. He actually subtitles it preparing students to thrive in an AI future in any grade level or content area. So looking forward to digging a little deeper into Matt's book and finding out what he has to say about AI literacy for any class.
Very nice. Good find. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that too. Hot off the press.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to do it for our discussion. Next time we meet, we're going to be talking about something related to AI. That's kind of our focus for this season of the show. So when we gather again for 773, that's what we'll be talking about. So hopefully you'll tune in then. Want to extend a heartfelt thank you to Rachel and Jason for their input into the show today. Thank you so much, you guys.
Thanks for being brave enough to have us.
Oh, yeah. You haven't worn out your welcome yet.
We're under contract until the end of May. So,
right. Then you can become free agents and go to any other technology podcast. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Anybody will pay you more, which would be every other one. All right. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you, Sally, for all you do. And thank you to our listeners. We know that you have choices with your time and you chose to spend this time with us. And we really value that and want to make the best use of that for you. So come back next time, bring a friend, and let's talk more about technology and ministry. Bye-bye, everybody.